Edition, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Friday, we made it. It's here. Okay. You know, if I have to hear another person whining about all the free stuff that the government won't be giving out if the Republican health care plan passes the Senate. No, that is how to frame the argument. When they talk about insuring people at lower premiums and giving subsidies to that and lowering, allowing for pre-existing conditions, foisting those insured persons upon the insurance companies without any deference to what the market will bear, what the market cost of insuring those people are. I feel that given that it's Friday, and we might want to escape just some of the, more pedestrian topics of the day, I thought, let's remind ourselves what happens in the world when the government gives free stuff out. Well, Venezuela, can we? So Venezuela right now, by the way, is on fire. Do you know this? Totally in utter chaos. There was a terrible demonstration on the street the other day. Somebody, I think, was actually burned alive in a protest. But it's the political instability there. The chaos on the streets are circumstances that are downwind of their horrible economic policies. You know Hugo Chavez, their now dead dictator who came to power 1998 when he came in. So for you millennials, you were in high school. I think millennials are, what are you? Millennials is, you know, class of 2000 and up. Is that kind of roughly the number? I'm almost, this is, by the way, I came to this realization. I'm a borderline millennial. I feel like I need to wash myself. But I bring this up because you millennials, you dear lovely millennials, you forgot, you weren't around in the 80s. Now, I was, okay, granted, I was a younger kid, but I was also a bit of an old soul. See, the circumstances, the things that are going on in Venezuela, I actually, on a small scale, got to witness firsthand. And I've told you before, my parents both were born in what was what used to be Czechoslovakia, which was a mouthful, a long series of letters that made one country. And later that country broke up into two, the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So my parents actually come from the Czech Republic part of it. And what is now the Czech Republic used to be a communist republic. It was one of the Soviet satellite states. And it was a country totally devastated by the same type of ideology that struck down Venezuela. Venezuela, in the 70s, just a little bit of history here. In the 1970s, Venezuela was the top economy measured by gross domestic product. Top economy in South America. It had one of the most stable democracies. And it governed itself by the principles of the free market system. You know that one that Bernie Sanders wants to burn to the ground. So I bring all this up only to say that somewhere in the 1990s, there was some socialists came to power, began to tinker with the system. Political instability ensued, and one Hugo Chavez, who was a military general, came to power, colonel, I think, actually, came to power, and he decided he was going to create a socialist paradise upon this earth. Now, here's how these leftists go about creating their social paradises. Step one, they need money. Because when you give away free stuff, it's not really free. You know, things cost money. So you got to get that money from someplace. And the way Chavez did it is he began wholesale confiscating properties that belonged to private companies. Now, it sounded really good on paper or in sound bites, which is why so many of our own domesticated liberals and closeted socialists and communists were all jumping on board. Can you give me a Sean Penn alleluia? You know, Penn was a close confidant of Hugo. You know, he'd go and they'd play Mahjong together, sipping mate tea and talking about grand ideas of how to transform the world, make it more egalitarian, make it more peaceful, make it more joyous. May the workers of the world unite and all that nonsense. But the plan was always what the ground game. Democrats love to use that word. The ground game was you take private property. You steal it, you take the money, and you pay for government programs with it. That was the plan. Because it was unsustainable for the government to merely tax corporations. There just wasn't enough money to do it. They couldn't just tax the way our system works. They ran out of money. And they couldn't borrow it from China the way we do. So what happened is, and it sounded good, right? Oh, you got an evil company like Chevron. And Chevron has a giant, you know, big oil refineries because Venezuela is sitting on the biggest oil reserves on our side of the world. So they say, okay, let's confiscate this factory, let's do this refinery. And that's it. Chevron is done. No refinery. But somebody's got to run the refinery, right? The idea is you don't steal the refinery and sell it because that's not really work. You're going to steal the refinery and then you're going to run it and the profit is going to all belong to the people. Read the government. So then what happens? The government runs the refinery. And they run it straight into the ground. Oil, by the way, oil production in Venezuela, down hundreds of percent. It was unbelievable what happened. So they're sitting on oil, but they can't refine it. They can't process it. You know, you can't just, you've got to extract it from the ground. You've got to put it in a barrel. You got to refine it. There are steps that need to happen that require that oil to make it out and so that it can be monetized. Let me ask you this. Who cares about running that refinery perfectly so that it maximizes efficiency, so that the most amount of oil is extracted from the ground, put into barrels, and put out on the market? Is it the private company that is responsible to shareholders, whose only role is to worry about that one particular specific enterprise? Or is it the government that can barely keep track of its own functions and then is trying to get into private? The answer is obvious. But the best example of why this all fails is what I witnessed in the Czech Republic, in Czechoslovakia. I was there weeks after the regime fell. And when I got there, I was struck by how everything, every sidewalk, every house, everything was decrepit. It was run over by weeds. Every building was gray, was dark, was dismal, dirty windows. There was zero pride of ownership. And you'd cross over the border, you know, you'd go right into Austria. And, you know, really, the Czechs and the Austrians, they used to be one country. So they're very similar people. You can't argue, you know, it's virtually apples to apples. And you'd cross the border into Austria and all the sidewalks are perfectly arranged. Bushes neatly trimmed. All the, you know, beautiful windows are clean. Houses are painted. Why? Well, the reason is quite simple. In Czechoslovakia, in my parents' country, all private property had been collectivized, which is a fancy Bolshevik term for stolen. It all belonged to the state. And when something belongs to the state, who does it really belong to? It doesn't belong to anyone. It just belongs to the government. Which means over in Austria, when the little house belongs to a family and that is their pride and joy, that is their nest egg, that is the piece of property that they love, that they cherish, that has been, maybe it was in the family, maybe not, maybe it's something they saved up for. At any rate, it represents something personal. And that individual takes care of that individual piece of property in a way that no government, no organization can. Because they care about it. They have a pride of ownership. And the same is true for factories. The same is true for any kind of large-scale endeavor, which is why I have always fundamentally, from the time, because it struck me, I didn't understand the why. I just remember looking at it going, oh my gosh, what the heck? This place is catastrophically poor. And I had a father and a mother who explained things to me. Well, son, look, this is communism, and let me explain to you what it's all about. And so from a very early age, I have always looked at efforts of the government to hand out things, to give things away, to collectivize and manage sectors of the private economy with tremendous amounts of skepticism. That's what this healthcare thing is. You know, when they talk about, that's what Obamacare, this is exactly what the Affordable Health Care Act, that's exactly what Obamacare was all about. It was a means by which a section of our economy that was private, that was handled by private insurance companies, that was handled by private facilities, it was a concerted effort to transfer that part of our economy under government control. And it all starts with the premise that there is something that is deserved, that there is something that is expected, that there is something, that there is a service, a cost of some kind that is a right. Think about that. Because I remember how communism was sold, by the way. In 1948 in Europe, this is common knowledge of people were told, look, it's everybody deserves an apartment. Everybody deserves a home. And so the idea is then you confiscate apartment buildings from companies and from individuals who own them. My grandfather owned an apartment building. In fact, built it right before the war, scraped together pennies, made it happen, built it. Then the war came. And was still able to hold on to it, survived the war, and then communism came. They took it away from him, and it was a beautiful apartment building. By the time 1989 rolled around, right, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and the liberation of Eastern Europe, that apartment building was crumbling because for four decades it was managed by a state bureaucracy. And that state bureaucracy didn't care about it, didn't care about the conditions of the people living there. Everybody got an apartment. But the thing about it is there was no concern about the quality of the apartment. There was no chance to better your conditions, unless, of course, you're part of the elite and were given special dispensations from the government. And this is what the dangers are with nationalizing healthcare. With putting socialism into healthcare. You want to give everybody a procedure. You want to say, oh, healthcare for everybody, surgery for everybody, everything. Okay. But the net result will be, sure, everybody will get it. But they might not be guaranteed that they're going to get it on a certain time. And the quality of it will be diminished. And the simple fact of the reason of that is, and you look to Canada as the example here, When you take a service, you've got to, there has to be an incentive for the people that are providing the service. The owner of the apartment building cares about those apartments being beautiful because he wants to rent them out. He wants to make a profit. And when the government gets involved with how much profit you can make, and that's what happened under Obamacare, right, with premiums. Nope, you can't charge more than that. You have to take people with pre-existing conditions. You've got a cap here, a cap there, a limit here, a limit there. And pretty soon, you're taking the profit out of the equation. which is why insurers began dropping out by the hundreds, right? Out of individual plans, different offerings, different products that they had. Less choice, and in the end, costs still go up. These examples, I tell you, all you have to do is to look at history. History repeats itself. All right, millennials, I hope you're listening. I got more for you when we come back. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
Talk radio, talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back talking about Venezuela communism and how it fits into the whole healthcare debate. A lot of millennials out there crying foul that the evil Republicans have done away with some of their entitlements. By the way, here's a little flashback from Michael Moore. This is vintage Michael Moore, circa 2013. Hugo Chavez declared the oil belonged to the people. He used the oil money to eliminate 75% of extreme poverty, provide free health and education for all. That's great. Except now there is no food to eat. So we got that little problem. One of the things, too, is there's always a discrepancy between the reality on the ground and the statistics that are put out there. Example here, where do I have the... So look at the Venezuelan GDP numbers. Chavez took office 17.4%. That was back in 1998. In 2012, GDP was down to 14.2%. That's a significant drop, measured in percentages. But here's what I got to tell you. By the way, stop measuring in 2012. Just stop keeping track. And the thing about this, too, is I don't even trust that number. I never trust the left to self-report accurately on the state of the economy. Do you remember the Obama administration? And... employment numbers. I always got the impression. No, I knew that. I mean, look, you and I, we live in the real world. We know what the situation is out there. And we were always told, unemployment is dropping. We're lower and lower. We've got record number of jobs. But did you really feel it? And then when they would jimmy with the numbers, too. This is a specific thing. I mean, they wouldn't count the people that were permanently out of the workforce, that had just dropped out, that stopped looking. And they began measuring those numbers differently. It's a very common thing. You know, the socialist communist republics during the Cold War, they would always report that they had 100% employment. They had no poverty. They had these incredible, gross domestic product figures that were largely fictional, right? And the liberals would all eat it up. You know, they'd go to these Soviet peace conferences. I know this is before your time. This is a big thing, these Soviet peace conferences, and they all go in there. Oh, this is so exciting. Look at the virtues and incredible things that are happening with this great socialist experiment. If only America could be so enlightened. But meanwhile, if you actually went to these countries, the dreary reality was totally different. You've seen some of these pictures from North Korea? Does that look like a place you want to live? I'm curious. Well, to provide everyone with something, let's say a job. Everyone is guaranteed a job. What's the incentive? I'm going to ask you this. What's the incentive for you to keep your job? Well, that's a good question. You're entitled to have it. You're entitled. You deserve a job. The Constitution says you need a job. You must have one. If you ever worked with somebody at a government office where they're guaranteed a job? I mean, yes, of course you have. It's called the DMV. And do you like dealing with people at... No, you don't. That's right. Does the DMV work well? No, it doesn't. Now picture an entire economy that functions that way. And oh, by the way, let me point out, it's worse than the DMV. Because I think technically you can actually get fired from the DMV. Somebody knows someone who's been fired from the DMV. Please call. But that's the theory, right? You've got to understand there has to be a threat that you can lose something like a job to encourage people to work at it and to maintain it and to do well, to provide their best. All right, John Wolfe up next with the news. He does his best, always. Sam Rojofsky, back right after this.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, live from an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain, the Sweet James Studios, and we are making radio great again. Really glad to have you here with us. Friday night, we've made it, survived the week. And if you're on your way home, drive safe out there. Some crazy people out on the roads. Do I talk about Sweet James? I'll tell you this. Do you know Sweet James took a phone call last night at 1 a.m. from somebody. This person happened to be a friend of a friend. And called in, and I guess it's because, you know, things happen. They happen, you know, they happen at 1 a.m. And you got to get answers. Called the office, got on the phone, got the advice they needed, 1 a.m. You know, I was talking to the person, they were just so impressed. I get help right when I needed it. And was found a great deal of solace. And now, the insurance company, they won't talk to you probably at 1 a.m. They might, you might talk to somebody, but then the next day they're going to call you back and they're going to want to get all sorts of information from you because they want to screw you over. Trust me. So what do? You don't talk to them. That's right. You do not talk to the insurance company. You call your lawyer. Get a free consultation. Sweet James Bergner. And you know the number. 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. And if you need more info, you can visit his website too. SweetJames.com. And remember, no recovery, no fee. James is the guy. Talk to him. He's the lawyer we trust. All right. Sam Rojofsky here. Sam Nation. Now, talking about Venezuela... And these photos, right? Not just it's not just about the street protests. I explained that the protests are people are starving, people are hungry, and they're hungry because they are out. They cannot buy food. You see these pictures of the empty store shelves? Like we got one right here. See that? Nothing on the shelves. I remember this vividly, by the way, when I was, it would have been November 1990. And it means it would have been about a year since Czechoslovakia had dumped its communist government. But it takes a long time to get around and undo 40 years of socialism, let me tell you. So I was there and I remember going to the store and I had money. We had dollars, right? We had cash and going to the store and there was nothing on the shelves. because you had an entire economy that was controlled by the government. The government decided how much needed to be produced, what needed to be produced, and the customer, right? The customer who spends money, not part of the equation. Think about that. An entire system built around what the government says needs to have happen, but that pays no attention to the consumer. The consumer's cash spend has no effect on what is put on the shelves. When you go to Walmart and you walk down the aisle, everything is on that shelf because they want you to spend your dollars. And it is not that way. So I remember I had some Halloween candy. I go in, I brought it, you know, because, you know, Halloween had just happened. And I was so glad I brought it. I had the Babe Ruth, little fun size Babe Ruth. And after seeing what was in the pantry at my relative's place, I just put the covers over my head at night and ate that Babe Ruth like it was the last piece of food on the earth. Oh, I'll never forget how good that chocolate bar was. Yeah, I'm glad I had that experience, actually. All right, back right after this.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
And Sam Rogowski here, back by popular demand, talking about socialism, communism, and how well it doesn't work. You know, I always do come back to my own experiences on this because I sympathize with so much of what I'm seeing coming out of Venezuela, and I see the tremendous wealth that can be robbed by a system where promises are made to give away free stuff without a means of paying for it. Well, the means of paying for it are always taking it away from the haves and giving it to the have-nots. Now, you know, you want, by way of example, you want to look at a country that is in a completely different place than Venezuela. I don't know if you realize this, but there was a country in South America that was on the same path as Venezuela when it was abruptly terminated. Now, this is not a very politically correct thing to mention because it was a bit of history that liberals and the left really like to thrash on about. But I'll tell you, you know, Chile, little tiny skinny country at the on the west coast of South America. Now, they had their own socialist revolution. They had a communist come in. His name was Allende. And Allende, he came to power. He was democratically elected like Chavez and, you know, came into power and was, you know, was ready to start his own socialist revolution. And he began, well, they began arresting the typical stuff, began arresting factory owners because they were exploitative. They were mean. They were greedy. Factories began to get confiscated. Well, nationalized, I think is the right word. And the economy began going into the toilet fast. And that is when a man named General Augusto Pinochet came into power, deposed Allende. Well, he blew up the presidential palace. It was a little bit messy. I give you that. But Pinochet was a disciple, well, not a disciple, but he was a student of Milton Friedman, noted economist from the University of Chicago. And he basically took Chile and applied a free market, pure free market principles, as pure as you can get down in South America. And to this day, Chile is the wealthiest economy. I mean, Chile is gangbusters. There's no comparison. Well, Brazil's doing well, but they've got their own set of problems and a lot of corruption. But Chile is a country that has enjoyed tremendous political stability. And Pinochet, of course, you'll remember too, He voluntarily stepped down. What was it, 1997, I think, or 6, 96? Voluntarily resigned as supreme dictator, or whatever he was. And this is by very unusual. Socialists never like to give up power voluntarily, and usually are deposed either by force or by death of natural causes. So it is interesting, a tale of two countries. I'm always saddened when I see great countries reduced to poverty with stupid ideas. And it's one of my great motivations of this program. If I can convince one person out there to abandon their lunacy, their bleeding heart, this bleeding heart nonsense, because it all, remember what I said about healthcare, it all sounds good. We have to. I just cannot live in a world where we don't take care of our sick. I get it. You know, even Trump makes statements like this. You know, he does. But you've got to understand how do you provide the top care to everyone? How do you do that? How do you pay for it? It's a real question. And anywhere in history that it has been tried, where they try to give the best of the best to everyone and anyone, eventually, everyone ends up with the worst of the worst. All right, back right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio
790
KABC.
Yeah, you want to hear from Sean Penn himself? This is good. Back in 2012, right around when the GDP in Venezuela had tanked by some 35%. You want to, right? Remember 2012? Told you about that? Here's Penn on Letterman, what he had to say about Hugo Chavez.
To me, my impression of the guy from what I hear and what I read and what people tell me is that he's nuts. Hugo Chavez is wacky and kind of entertaining, but we ought to keep our eye on him. What was your impression of the guy?
Well, I think if people have oil under their ground, they're called wacky. I found him very fascinating guy. Very, you know, he's done the moment incredible things for the 80% of the people that are very poor there. But a fascinating character, somebody I'm writing about.
What an idiot. This is, by the way, one of many exhibits of why actors should just stay out of thinking. And if they do think, for heaven's sakes, keep these thoughts to yourself. My father, who is, you know, he would never call himself a victim, but is a genuine victim of communism, right? I mean, this was his childhood that was scarred by it. And his country devastated. My dad cannot go to see a Sean Penn movie. Can't see it. You know, Penn would go and cozy up with Chavez. He'd fly down there on his jet, have long, soulful chats with him, come back and sing his praises. Chavez would then come to the U.S., go to the U.N. Remember, he stood at the U.N. and spoke after President Bush did, and he crossed himself and he said, you know, it smells like sulfur, in reference to George Bush smelling like the devil. You know, Sean, the reason 80% of the people are so poor over there, you know, if they had just had a little bit of these free market principles that I talk about, the percentages would be reversed, if not better. Chevron could have done a better job running that country than Hugo Chavez. At least Chevron would have employed people, given them honest jobs, and formed an economy based around merit, where hard work, industry, right, smarts, all result in some sort of system that works, that encourages people up and out of poverty. Do you go to school? Were you ever in a competitive classroom? What if everyone gets an A? Give everyone an A. Let's do that. They've tried this in classrooms. Everybody an A. Pretty soon, what happens? Does anybody study? Does anybody actually have an incentive to learn the material? Well, yeah, you know, maybe there's that one or two people that do. They found this out. In fact, they did a study where they would actually take points. They'd take GDP from the top performing students and give it to the lower performing ones. And the result was that eventually the class basically, instead of having highs and lows, everybody just went to the fatty middle. Not making a weightist comment. I'm talking about performance on the bell curve. I want a system of government and of economics that encourages excellence, that encourages the best that a person can give society. And that's not a pipe dream. That system is one where that person's own personal ambition and greed, even, is rewarded, is encouraged, and can be satiated on the open market. That's the word. Okay, have a great weekend. And be a capitalist, will you please, for Pete's sake. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back Monday. Can't stop it.